Thanks for listening in and joining us on the Australian Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Russell Jarrett, physical performance coach, health club owner, fitness educator, and yes, all-round fitness geek. I'm the guy who probably trains on Christmas Day. I would rather lift a barbell than drink a beer, and I'm a student of all things training and physical improvement. So what are we all about here at the Australian Fitness Podcast? Let me set the scene for you. If you've dabbled in training, exercise, weight loss, muscle gain, getting stronger, getting leaner, running further, or have even the slightest interest in fitness and training, I think you'll get a lot out of this podcast. I last spoke with Jay Ferrugia on episode 20 of the podcast. Jay is a gentleman that's been working with humans at the elite level and also with general population groups for many, many years, and has built himself an incredible reputation as a person who will leave no stone unturned in the pursuit of optimizing his clients' physical performance, their health, their wellness, and getting a result for them. When Jay speaks, his dedication to this and his extensive body of knowledge is self-evident. We talked a little bit about how he's managed his current situation and challenges to business in the US, about his approaches and about his philosophies on helping people achieve their best physical outcomes. Jay is a guy who has a very clear and distinct idea of where he can add value, and in my opinion is a true professional and someone who seeks perfection in the pursuit of a result. His resume of work and the people that he has worked with and learnt from is an incredible list of the who's who of physical improvement. No doubt Jay is now a leader and a mentor and many to look up to for other instructors and coaches coming through. He's a guy well worth listening to and well worth working with. If you wish to connect with Jay, I've got his contact details in the show notes. On a separate point, for any listeners that are coaches or instructors themselves and wanting to do some personal development, professional development, I've got a workshop coming up. It's a workshop on ACL rehabilitation, anterior cruciate ligament rehabilitation. It's a workshop that I wrote and had accredited with Fitness Australia so that it can be recognized for CEC points, which it is, four CEC points, which is a pretty good outcome. The workshop is being conducted online. It's on April 16th at 3 p.m. There's a cost to it of $97. It will be presented, obviously, live via Zoom workshop. So if you want to get on board with that, just go to my workshop, which is russelljarrett.com.au. Click on workshops and you'll be able to send an inquiry or start an enrollment for that workshop. So that should be fun. It's, again, something that is a little bit unique in that it's got a strong rehabilitative background with it. But as I said, it is recognized with Fitness Australia for four CECs. You don't have to be registered with Fitness Australia to do this workshop. You can simply do it even if you're just interested in the process of rehabilitating serious knee injuries. But it's a good workshop. I've been working on it for a long time. I think it'll bring good value to people, especially coaches and instructors. So look forward to that one. Anyway, here's the show. Enjoy the content, chat here and the podcast with Jay Ferrugia. So Australian Fitness Podcast is at it again. We have been travelling around Australia. Well, travelling, when I say travelling, we've been doing Zoom calls with people in WA, Queensland, Melbourne. Now we're going OS. It's probably the only way I can actually go overseas at the moment, and that is to get this gentleman on the call via Zoom and do another podcast with him. I checked my notes before I got online, and I last spoke with Jay Ferrugia in February or mid-February 2020, and then it was about a month later that, well, in my country, Australia, everything got tipped upside down. I'm not sure about Jay's experience. We might touch on that a little bit through the show. But anyway, he's with us. We're going to have a chat. Jay Ferrugia, welcome to the show again. How are you, my man?
Thanks, Russell. I appreciate it, brother. Things are good.
That's the way. Now, we had a little chat off air. You've been doing a little bit of work, obviously, still online, or a lot of your work online. Let's touch on it quickly before we get into some other stuff. But, I mean, this must have been a massive challenge for you, and how are some of the ways that you've managed that? I'm also interested in what are the observations that you've seen in the American fitness industry specifically. Obviously, in Australia, there's been different situations in different states, but how has the industry at large managed the virus and the various protocols that have been put in place in the US?
Well, I think it's like anything else, like any other industry, any other time in history, where if something happens that throws you off course, like you have to take action. You have to change course rapidly. So I've seen a lot of people, and it doesn't even have to be something like a global pandemic, right? Like just things happen. Mm. Like maybe Facebook algorithms change or something happens. Maybe, you know, whatever it is, there's always going to be changes every day of our lives. And the people who adapt the fastest and take the fastest action and don't deliberate and don't ask 70 million people for opinions, but just take action and start moving, those are the people who are going to survive and thrive and win. And the people who sit there and go, oh shit, woe is me. I'm going to blame the government. I'm going to blame the president. I'm going to blame this. I'm going to blame that. And then I'm going to over deliberate and overthink. Those people will always suffer and struggle. So I try to always associate myself. And that's why I always harp on the fact that you have to surround yourself with people who are living the way you want and doing the things you want to do, taking action, being leaders, you know, being decisive, making decisions, because that bleeds into and rubs off on all you and all that you do. So I think, you know, again, people who were able to do that and pivot and adapt quickly, they're doing great. I have a lot of friends who 2020 was financially their best year ever. Mm. I also know a lot of people who got crippled in 2020. Mm. So it really just comes back to creating that ability for yourself to execute properly and adapt quickly. Now, of course, a lot of people had to go online. And that's very challenging now. I have a little bit of an advantage there because I've been online since 2001. So I've been online for 20 years. So if you're getting online today, what I do probably is not going to work for you. So you got to figure it out. Right now, you need to really establish a niche more. You need to probably spend, this is going to sound like an exaggeration, but you probably need to spend 5 hours in a room alone with no electronics and a notebook and figure out who your specific avatar is. Who specifically do you help? Why are you the best solution? Why should this person choose your service? How do you relate to that person? And then just get in the habit of, people love predictability and consistency. So 365 days a year, show up for your unique person, your unique client. How can you help them? And just over and over and over and over again, and just do it repeatedly. And then they will see, okay, this guy or this girl is the person that's going to help me.
I mean, you must have a massive advantage because you've been online for, well, probably the better part of 15 to 20 years. So you would have been one of those early adopters in going online and presenting some of the services that you've got to people that can access them from all over the states and perhaps all over the world. Did you find that your business actually, well, I won't say benefited, but your business probably didn't really struggle like many others during the chaos of last year. Was there any noticeable change in how people, did more people reach out to you because you were online? Is that something that you found, you know, was popular and needed?
No, because everybody went online. So of course there's more competition, but you need to, again, you need to be very specific with what you do. You also need to realize that when there's a ton of competition, you can't, it's going to be really hard to sell low price stuff.
Yeah.
So now everybody and their mother has a $27 ebook or a $10 a month type of deal. That stuff took a hit. And then during times of uncertainty, where people don't know what, you know, the stock market and just the financial outlook of their, you know, business and their life is going to be, you need to give people very specific stuff. That's why I go back to being that specific niche and helping. Because if it's just fitness or you're just going to teach people how to do X, Y, Z, it could be any kind of business, but it really needs to be specific because people need certainty during times of uncertainty. So if your offer, whatever you're selling, is remotely confusing to them and they don't get it,
yep,
then you've lost that potential customer. I definitely took a hit at the beginning. I'm a big action taker and sometimes I make decisions too fast because I just, you know, I don't want to get caught up. So I made a bunch of decisions and took some action, in let's say March, April, May, that in retrospect was probably a mistake, but I was just trying to figure it out as I was going. I couldn't just sit there and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know?
Look, I think, you know, I agree with you completely in the respect that, some decision is better than no decision, because if you sit and procrastinate, you actually get stuck. And then when you get stuck, you start to overthink. And when you start to overthink, you start to become even more paralyzed. The old saying of paralysis by analysis. You know, so I think, you know, I'm sure that if you feel like you made any decisions prematurely, you wouldn't be on your own, because I'm guaranteeing that every person in every endeavor at some point last year probably made a decision or a choice or created some kind of a strategy that they would have had to have changed, because who knew the perfect way to navigate? Yeah. No one.
Right.
I've noticed a trend where I live, and that is that I think what's happened is that this virus has galvanized people's opinions on exercise. By that I mean that some people have actually made a conscious decision to put more time, effort, and energy into getting fit and staying fit and managing their health. I've also noticed another segment of the population that seem to have taken the ostrich strategy and stuck their head in the sand, and they're waiting they're waiting for this to go away or blow over. What have you noticed, and what are some of the I reckon I know the answer to this, but I'll get you to expand. Your messages, especially on social media, to your avatar, seem to be a lot more targeted and a lot stronger around you have to take responsibility for your health.
Sorry, Russell, you cut out there the last second. I heard you say you have to take responsibility.
Yeah. The messages that you seem to be putting out are that you have to take responsibility for your own health.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's been, I'm glad you noticed that, because, did I lose it there?
I got you.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is a good lesson for people, that maybe are in the fitness industry or whatever industry you're in. I've gotten more aggressive and more direct with that message that you have to take responsibility, because just, you know, the state of the world over the last year, whatever it is, you have to take responsibility for your finances. You have to take responsibility for your health. You can't rely on anybody. Nobody's coming in on a white horse to save you. Mm. It's like, you have to do it. Extreme 100% ownership of anything. But if ever there was a time in history where we, as a global population, were told, like, dude, this is it. This is a wake-up call. If you're not training and taking care of yourself, now is the time. It's super important. And me, you know, and even people who are training, I think there's a way to do it smarter that people hadn't thought of before. Like, oh, maybe these CrossFit workouts and training for 2 hours a day on zero carbs and all this isn't really that good for my immune system. So I noticed, A, some people who just never trained started training, which is great. And then don't overcomplicate it. Do whatever. If you're doing CrossFit or body, who cares? You're doing something. And then some people who've been training forever said, oh, man, this training is actually weakening my immune system or whatever. Let's smarten up the training a little. So two different levels, both which are great.
Jay, your specific sort of population that you target, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to be males, specifically males around the age of 40 and over. Is this a segment of the population that has neglected, in your opinion, neglected their health and fitness, or is it a segment of the population that you think just need more guidance and are probably approaching their fitness and their wellness in a less than optimal fashion? What's your opinion on that?
So my answer is going to be neither of those two. I mean, I could address those two, but my answer is, actually, I just like hanging out with and talking and working with those kind of people more.
Yep.
I know they're not going to get super offended.
Yeah.
I know they're going to get my references and jokes.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So really, that's the first and foremost. But I do think, and I'm sure you'd probably agree, you know, when you and I were younger, being 40 or 45 was super old. But now you see The Rock is 48 or Joe Rogan's 50. It's like, that's all gone. So there's a segment of the population, like myself, like you, who are still training harder than ever, you know, trying to look better than ever. But there's definitely those people that you and I went to high school with who have kind of just totally forgotten about it. Mm. I don't like working with one of those populations more than the other. Like, if someone comes in and they're super advanced and they're 46, let's get you in the best shape ever. If you've never trained since high school, let's get you in the best shape ever. Like, I just like that. I just like that. Again, people tend to like people who are like themselves. So if you're my age, grew up with the same likes and interests. I think for anyone, any business, any coach, like that's a good idea. Work with people that you like and your work will be much more enjoyable.
Yep.
Now, that said, I do have guys in their 30s, some guys even in their late 20s, as long as we connect well. Like I never say yes to a client if we're not going to connect well. If we're opposite personalities, if we have opposite worldviews, I'm just not going to enjoy it. So I turn down the money. I think you have to do that if you want to build a business you like and don't dread.
Mm. So what are the common needs? I'm really interested in that segment of the population because, like you, I probably identify with it. You know, myself being of that age bracket, but I find that that age bracket, you know, there's a couple of things that you need to get right first when you're working with that age bracket physically for them to get a really good result. And I think one of the things that they struggle with is balancing a life that's dedicated somewhat to exercise, training, and staying well and staying healthy, but also managing the outside life that they have, be it work, family commitments, being able to, you know, socialize, have a drink, have a beer, you know, have a burger. How do you help them find that balance and create that, you know, that package where they can still look after themselves, but actually also make some positive changes? Because you seem to do that very, very well.
Thank you. So I just did a few consultations this week with people in their 40s, super busy, super stressed out. And they're like, hey, man, this, what I used to do was working. And I got this advice from you and I used to get lean and now I can't get lean. And I said pretty much to all three of them, let me guess, your stress levels are through the roof. They're like, yep, 100%. So cortisol is high. You're getting the abdominal fat. I get it. How's your sleep? Terrible? Terrible. Got it. Okay. So before we even worry about diet and training, we got to address those things. Then when it comes to training, like I said, is your like everything's a stressor.
Yep.
Your relationship, your job, paying the bills, a workout, any type of workout's a stressor. All these things are stressors. So we don't take this into account. So people come in and they're like, hey, give me a workout and diet. And I'm like, it doesn't even matter. Mm. I can give you a workout, a diet, and a big bag of steroids. It doesn't matter until we fix these things. So we're going to sometimes, even if your goal is to get lean, we're going to up your calories because they're so low that it's such a stressor that your thyroid and your cortisol is all out of whack, your testosterone. So we're going to get you feeling better, reducing stressor. So we're probably going to cut down your training volume. We're going to increase your calories, maybe increase your carbs. Maybe if you're fasting, we're going to stop you fasting. We're going to improve your sleep. We're going to get you doing some meditating and deep breathing. And then the training is going to be probably lower rep, longer rest period, less of a stressor. And then we'll take it from there. And that's the same way I would handle anyone, whether you come to me super advanced or you come to me as a beginner. Let's dial that in and build some lifestyle changes instead of saying, oh, let me just go on this extreme diet and workout for 3 weeks and I'm ripped, but then you're back to where you were a month later.
Mm. And when people are progressing through that process, what do they find to be the biggest challenges? What are your clients and the people that work with you, what do they find to be the biggest challenges? Is it getting their diet right, or is it finding the ability to sleep correctly? Because, you know, when I listen to people like yourself talk, the one of the common threads that is repeated out there is sleep, the critical component of sleep. Because if sleep is poor, it can affect you hormonally. Your endocrine system can be affected. Your appetite can be affected. Your recovery abilities can be affected. So is sleep something that you're finding that a lot of these people are not getting right? It seems to be so critical.
Yeah, it's almost across the board. Nobody is paying enough attention to sleep, especially here in America. But it seems like globally now everybody wears, you know, no sleep, rise and grind, you know, work your ass off, always hustling. They wear that as a badge of honor, but it just doesn't work. Like you can't, even The Rock has said, I get 6 hours, but I know I would be better off with more. But The Rock's a genetic freak. Arnold's a genetic freak. A lot of guys are genetic freaks. So if The Rock knows that he would be better with more than 6 hours, what someone who's probably got more stress than The Rock, doesn't have the ability to eat and train and recover the way he does, what are they going to do with those stress levels? They're just going to get fatter and weaker and more injured. They're going to get, their immune system's going to be crushed. They're going to be getting sick more often. So we have to address that by, like I said, just cutting back all the stressors, reducing the volume. And then what I like is I have none of the trackers are 100% accurate. And I mean, you could spend thousands to get one that's more accurate, but I have most of my clients on a Whoop, and then I could see all their stuff on my phone and be like, oh, your recovery's 44. What's going on? And whenever I see consistently, so that like on a day-to-day basis, maybe it's not the most accurate thing, but we could see consistently over a week or over a month, if your recovery scores and your sleep are terrible, then we're going to say, all right, we're going to cut down your training volume. That might be sets per workout. That might be days per week. We're going to cut out HIIT or any kind of high intensity cardio stuff. We're just going to do low intensity stuff. So again, that's just so overlooked, but we got to get there first before we can start stacking on the heavy, high intensity training and all this stuff that people want to do. Cause it's, like I said, it's just not going to do anything. And sleep is huge. So 52 weeks a year, I will have to reiterate over and over again, the things you need to do, you know, having the dark room, having the nighttime routine, having your room be 68 degrees, even things that people wouldn't think of for a good night's sleep. A good night's sleep actually starts in the morning. So get outside, reset your circadian rhythms, get exposed to natural sunlight first thing in the morning. If you live somewhere where it's warm, if you can have your shirt off, even better. You know, things like that. Always be thinking of how is this going to affect my sleep. Training later in the day, that could affect your sleep. Having faster carbs late at night, white rice or something could spike your blood sugar and your cortisol in the middle of the night. So always be keeping a journal. Like, if you can make your sleep better, everything else will get better.
Great advice. I listened to a podcast of yours recently. You interviewed a gentleman. His name, I can't think of his surname, but his first name was Ian. He was a guy with a really thick Irish accent, and he spoke to you about some of the experiences or some of his observations from people specifically in Europe. And also you spoke to him about, do you remember this episode? I reckon it was maybe
Ivor Cummins.
Ivor Cummins. Yeah. That was it. It was fascinating, Jay, because what I took away from it was just some really, really usable information and some really useful strategies on boosting your immune system. Can you summarize some of those strategies, if you can remember back? Can you summarize some of the strategies that he spoke of? Because I think, getting back to one of our earlier questions, people have to take responsibility for their own health, but more specifically, people have to pay attention to their immune health, because they're too, like, you can be really healthy, you can be fit, you can be healthy, but you can also be immunosuppressed, because if you're training hard and not sleeping, well, you might be really fit and strong, but you're also perhaps susceptible because your system's overloaded. Talk us through some of the strategies that he mentioned in terms of immune health.
Yeah. So 70% of your immune system's in your gut. So improving gut health is going to be first and foremost. So if you just without even doing any fancy testing or anything, like if you eat a food and your nose runs afterwards, or you get bloated, or you have gas, like that's a food that, I don't know, maybe you have an intolerance to, maybe you have an allergic reaction to, just doesn't do well for you. So you want to eat foods that improve your gut health, which is basically protein, steamed veggies, some fruits, some roots and tubers, anything that's not on that list, you know, sugar, processed grains, and the worst of all is industrial seed oils, canola oil thing. Those are, canola oil and the industrial seed oils probably cripple your immune system more than anything else. So you want to enhance your gut health, eat probiotic containing foods like kimchi and sauerkraut, maybe supplement with probiotics if your gut health is not good right now. You always want to just work on improving your gut health. And then you want to make sure your vitamin D, but so most people with COVID have low vitamin D status.
Yep.
So if you're someone where there's sun, get outside for 20, 30 minutes a day and expose your skin to the sun. It's always worth getting blood work done and seeing clinically if you're deficient in vitamin D. But if it's winter somewhere, it's just a protective kind of thing to take 5,000 to 10,000 IU a day. It's not going to hurt you, and it's going to protect you. So I think vitamin D status, avoiding the industrial seed oils, and just really optimizing your gut health in any way possible. Those would be the main things. And then sleep, really, again, I know I keep going back to sleep, but sleep is the number one way to improve your immune system. There have been studies that show just one night, like what it can do to your white blood cell count and things like that. Like, it can really improve your immune system function in just a night of good sleep. So always goes back to sleep. So I think those are the main things. I don't know if I'm forgetting anything, but those are really the main things.
Yeah, he seemed to touch on those things specifically. I found it a really good episode, because, you know, he did mention that you know, the immune system seems to be the common problem here. If we can keep that strong, you know, if I remember correctly, he talked about the fact that the virus can actually pass through you. So you may you may actually have it, but not really understand
absolutely.
It.
That's what he was saying, and that's what a lot of people I respect have said. And it makes sense to me that at some point we're all going to be exposed to it. Mm. It's just your health, the health of your immune system determines it. I would guess at this point everyone's been exposed to it. It's hard to say, right? Nobody knows for sure, but you know, it's like anything else. It's the health of your immune system, the strength of your immune system, whether it just passes through you and you get no symptoms or if you get crushed by it.
Yep. Jay, in Australia, we have, you know, we have a massive problem with people that with our population and males lead the way here. We have a massive problem with our population being overweight or obese. And there's probably a very similar trend in the United States. I feel like the industry, the fitness industry and the health, well, no, I'll rephrase that. The fitness industry, as in the industry that tries to get people healthy through exercise, through good nutrition, through movement, through all of those things, I feel like we're losing the battle. How do you see it in your country? Because I just feel like we're losing the battle here in Australia, and I don't know really if anyone's got an answer.
I agree with you. I think we're losing the battle too. I mean, statistically, yeah, it's not even a guess. Like, we are losing the battle. I think I like some of the stuff that Jamie Oliver does and people like that, where they're trying to change what kids eat. I think it really starts there. I mean, sometimes it's too late if a guy's in his 40s, 50s, whatever. I think it really goes back to that. I think we, and this is beyond my scope, you know, but changing education, you know, starting with young kids, making sure they're taught health classes and how to eat and how do we get school lunches and how do we get healthy food in general to be more affordable. I mean, it's super expensive to eat healthy, so yeah. I get it. That's, you know, I don't think there's anyone who's promoting you know, an ebook or a 90-day program that's going to solve the problem. I think it's bigger. I think we need to get into the schools. That's why I love what Jamie Oliver's doing. Change education, make sure that schools have you know, there's a lot of schools that remove playtime and recess and gym classes and things like that. That's insane. You know, I think that's the only way to really change it.
I had a young boy that I was working with recently, and we were doing some work in the gym, and I had a rope. I've got a couple of ropes that hang from the ceiling. So we were doing some rope climbs, or I wanted to do some rope climbs. You know, I thought, let's do something that's a bit different, a bit fun. And I'm like, I want you to go hand over hand and climb that rope and try and get to the ceiling, which might have been, you know, 10 foot high, 12 foot high, I don't know, something like that. And he looked at me quizzically. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, climb the rope, you know, grab the hand over hand, climb the rope. I'm like, surely you've climbed a tree or something like that. You know, this kid was 16. Yeah. He's like, no, what do you mean? And he was, wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, those sorts of things. So then I dug a little deeper, and basically what I discovered was he'd never climbed a tree. He'd never really gone outdoors and done anything by himself. Then I dug a little deeper. So I got some mats out and I said, okay, let's do a roll. Let's roll like, you know, a forward roll, like not a somersault, but a forward roll, tuck and roll. Yeah. Couldn't do it. Had never done it. And like you, to your point exactly, you know, over here in Australia, in traditional PE class or, you know, physical education classes, they barely do any kind of gymnastics movement now. They don't, you know, they don't do a forward roll. They don't use trampolines. They don't get into a handstand. This was all stuff.
All that stuff is so beneficial for building your athleticism.
Yeah. And we used to do that at school in PE class. We used to play on big crash mats and do gymnastics. And we don't. Yeah. I mean, it's lost from the curriculum now. Mm-hmm. It's
100%. That's why I love organizations that you know, big companies that are now putting in gyms and not only allowing but encouraging employees to, hey, take an hour during the middle of the day, go use the gym. Companies that are putting, you know, super healthy food in. You know, so there are companies that are doing it and trying to get people as adults. I think that's really important.
Yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah. I just want to touch quickly on yourself too, because I think that what you show on your social media in terms of your own exercise is just so targeted and so beneficial and so specific. I mean, let me get this right. You just seem like you target big movements, heavy weights, good recovery. You know, and it's not that you don't stray away from that. It's not that you don't have variety, but there's an underlying there's an underlying consistency to what you do for yourself. Big movements, heavy weight, repeated consistently. Is that, am I right there?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I'm huge on execution. I think most people just overlook execution, and somehow everybody thinks they know how to train. I've been doing Romanian deadlifts for 25 years. Every time I do them, I'm still trying to figure out how to get a little bit better at them. So most people, I would say, check your ego. You probably don't know how to train. It's something that you're always going to be getting better at. I would think if you talk to Tom Morello or Bruce Springsteen or someone, they're still trying to get better at playing the guitar. So always have that mindset of always trying to get better. Every inch, and the older you get, the more execution becomes important. Every inch of every rep should be masterful. Like you're, you know, like you're a virtuoso, like you're Beethoven or someone, like really take pride in that. But yeah, big compound movements. I think a mistake people make is when they get older, they say, oh, I'm going to train super high reps and lightweight. That's not always the best. That's actually more fatiguing. Overall systemic fatigue, it causes more CNS fatigue. It's actually easier to get injured with higher reps because your just mental focus has to endure, you know, just a longer time under tension. There's more just possibility for things to break down. So especially if you want to build and maintain muscle mass as you get older, keeping it fairly heavy in a 5 to 8 rep range, masterful execution. And then you got to choose the right exercises. So it's not just, oh, everybody should bench, squat, overhead press, and deadlift. No, those exercises actually, on paper, they're good, but for most people, they're not great. I prescribe variations of them, you know, based on your unique structure and things like that. And then when you find those exercises, and that's the reality too, that I don't think a lot of people understand, is there's not a lot of great exercises for each person, for each body part or movement pattern. There might be three, you know, there might be like a big compound squatting movement. I might have two or three. So I want to change that 52 weeks a year and risk, you know, any kind of injury or anything like that. If you find a good one, stick with it, you know, long term, and then just swap it out, you know, when you need to, when you're getting stale or whatever. But yeah, I try to keep things simple and keep things consistent for sure.
I mean, you have, like me, you've been doing this for a very long time. In fact, I'll ask you, how long, Jay? We I've never really asked you that, but how old are you now, and how old were you when you started working as a strength and conditioning coach slash coach? How long have you been doing this?
I started when I was 19. I'm 46.
Wow. Okay. So nearly 30 something years.
Yeah.
Hey, Jay, in that time, I've noticed in the Australian fitness industry scene that the training courses, the education and the instructors coming through, the level of education and the level of knowledge they have, to me, seems to be getting worse. There seems to be, you know, it's not as strong as it once was. The actual courses that are run now seem to be a little bit thin in terms of detailed knowledge about training and prescription and technique and execution and all the things that you talk about. Have you had any observations like that yourself in the US? Do you have anyone that sort of is involved in the instruction or the education of trainers? What's coming through? What's coming through in that regard with new trainers and instructors?
I definitely see what you're saying, and I agree with you. I think now more than ever, there are more and more strength coaches, trainers than, you know, when you and I first started. And so I was just having this conversation at dinner the other night. So there's a handful of influencers that I'm friendly with. I totally respect what they do, but they never took a certification. And now there's way more than a handful. I'm just saying about the people that I know. There's countless, the majority of them, right? Never took a certification, never read a book on training. Everything they've learned from training is just Instagram. Oh, I'll try this. I saw that guy do it. It's just Instagram, just Instagram. So unless you're in the gym training people, and unless you're going to courses, unless you're traveling 2 to 5 times a year, let's say the world's back to normal, you know, prior to COVID or after COVID, unless you're traveling 2, 3, 5 times a year to go intern somewhere, to go work under someone, to go to all these different workshops, it's going to be really hard to be good at this and to really learn. And you have to, you know, even though at the beginning I said nowadays you have to have a specific niche, at the beginning you have to work with everybody. Say yes to every. It's the opposite. Like you say yes to everything at the beginning, and then as you get older and more mature and you want to not live in an insane asylum, you have to start saying no to things, you know? But yeah, you you're just seeing so many people now. They just don't go through what we had to go through coming up. And I think, I don't know what the solution is for that either, but I think that does make it easy though to stand out, because there are so many shitty trainers out there and influencers and things like that, that if you say, hey, I'm going to do it the old school way, I'm going to train people, I'm going to invest, I'm going to fly around, I'm going to learn from everybody, I'm going to take a bunch of courses instead of just learning from Instagram posts, I think you'd be better off.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the sexy or fast way or approach to building a career, is it? But I think you're right. I think even though social media is such a massive part of our industry now, it's not going to go away. I'm a believer that consistent good work and consistent approach to execution and to perfection, or to trying to achieve perfection over time, will tend to separate you from the crowd. I know there's a lot of people out there that feel that social media might be the fast ticket, but I think that they're setting themselves up for a hard path. There's really no quick way in any aspect of business. You've just got to do those hard yards and you'll get there eventually. Sure. I think that I think you are a terrific example of that. One more question before we kind of wrap this for yourself, but do you still have mentors that you speak to? Who were people that mentored or influenced you in your development in your early years? And who are people that you perhaps see now as really producing some great quality work in their career? I know it's a broad question, but there must be someone in your network or people in your network that you really respect and still continue to learn from this day. For instance, a few episodes ago, I interviewed Matt Wenning, who's a strength coach who does some really amazing stuff. And he spoke about the influence that Charles Poliquin had on him, and spoke very fondly about that. Who are those people for you, Jay? I'm interested.
Dorian Yates, Ian King. Remember Ian King, right?
Yeah.
So at the beginning, it was Ian King, it was Dorian Yates, it was Dante Trudell, definitely Louis Simmons. Who else back in the day? I mean, I loved reading the old stuff back in the day, you know, the old Iron Man, John McCallum, Hackenschmidt, Saxon, Super Squats, Randall Strassen, Dr. Ellington Darden. I'm drawing a blank on Dr. Ken Leisner, guys like that. All were a huge influence on me. And then over time, you know, getting older, friends like Alan Cosgrove, Dave Tate, Joe DeFranco, Luca Hosovar, who else is doing great work? I always hate this because I know I'm gonna leave somebody out. But, you know, those guys for sure. I mean, you mentioned Matt Wenning. He's doing great stuff. So many people. And then just in terms of, like, business stuff, Cosgrove again. I learned a ton from Dave Tate, Pedros Koulian, Craig Ballantyne, two really close friends of mine.
Wow, that's a list of all stars right there. I'm glad you mentioned those names, and like you say, there's going to be more. I'm just going to ask you one more thing. You know, it's very clear to me that you've had a strong background and a very strong philosophy on how you approach what you do. Is there any kind of change to your approach or change to your philosophy, or have you added anything to the way you communicate to people now based off what we've been through over the last 12 months? Personally, I've probably taken a little bit of a harder edge, and so what I believe now is that people need to be told more so than ever, well, not told, but that's the wrong term perhaps, but people need to understand more so now than ever that, as you said earlier, that personal responsibility is critical in all aspects of life. What I've learned from the last 12 months is that I have to manage my own life. I can't let anything else try and manage me, because if I do, I'm going to be in trouble, whether that be physically or in terms of health or financially or whatever it is. I have to take way more responsibility for my stuff than ever before. And that's the message that I'm giving to my people, my clients and my members now, that from a health perspective, you have to take responsibility. That's the change in my approach and my attitude. Has the last 12 months changed you in any way?
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you said that because I'm in 100% agreement with what you said. I'm on board with that. I think I did a good job of that, but now more so than ever, going way harder, more aggressively on it. Just letting people know that it's so important that nothing can be left to chance. You really have to embrace the power of habit and routine. I think if in a world that's so uncertain, if you don't know what you're doing, what you have to do, exactly what you're doing each day when you wake up, and you don't have every single hour of the day, you could, you know, watch Netflix at night, but at least the first half of your day, especially if you're stuck working at home now for so long, you have to create routine. So you know what you're eating for breakfast, what time you wake up, what your morning rituals are, what your most important task is, what time you're training. And you have to build in that consistency and that monotony and just repeat it over and over again. Because now if you don't have your boss there, if you don't have constraints, if you don't have to be at work, you know, that's why some people thrive in the military or in school, because they need that structure. Well, now we all have to create that structure, and discipline equals freedom. You know, we have to create that for ourselves. So you have to lock in your routines, create a list of daily non-negotiable, you know, for you is going to make you feel better and feel whole and feel fulfilled at the end of the night. So then you can unwind and watch Netflix and be a good husband or a good dad or a good wife or whatever it is, instead of having all that stress, your mind that you didn't do what you promised yourself. And you know, now more than ever, you need to be more resilient. You need to build your confidence. And how do you build your confidence and your resilience? By taking care of yourself, promises to yourself that you keep. So okay, I'm going to get up at 6 every day. This is my exact breakfast that I had. I'm going to do these things. And then at the end of the day, when you look in your journal and you check it off, I kept those promises to myself. So now I love myself more. So now I have more confidence. So now I can be a better leader. I could be, you know, a better husband or dad or whatever it might be, a better friend. And that bleeds into everything. And the funny thing is, you know, you might think, okay, if I keep those promises to myself and I build my self-esteem, people will like me more. And that's true, because you'll be more enjoyable to be around, but you'll actually like them more. You're not capable of loving other people fully unless you love yourself. So it's like the cliche, like put your mask on if the plane is going down before you help other people. Take care of yourself. Take care of your health, take full 100% responsibility, and then you'll find that your stress levels go down, your confidence goes up, you love people more, people love you more. Like, it just bleeds into everything, but you really got to prioritize it. You can't sit back. For so many people, 2020 was a major fail. That just happened, and it is what it is, but you can't look back at it. Some people thrive. Some people sat on the couch and watched Netflix and gained 28 pounds. You don't want 2021 to be a repeat, because you will resent yourself, and when you resent yourself, you resent everyone around you. And it's just a downward spiral that consistently, you got to get really dedicated and focused on structure and that routine and that discipline.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's like you say, Jay, 2020 was a bizarre year. And you know what? There's still a lag effect. I mean, here in Australia, there's still a lag effect of what's happening.
Oh, totally.
It's going to take a long time for all of this to clear, and then for people to start to rebuild stuff that was lost, or rebuild the damage that they suffered mentally, emotionally, and physically. Because, you know, in some way, shape, or form, everyone has been touched by this. Even if your business has been, you know, even if your business has survived, or even if your own career hasn't really been affected, obviously, I guarantee that in some way, shape, or form, everyone has been touched by this situation somehow. Once again, thank you for this. I love your clarity. I love the strength in your message. It's clear, it's concise, it's detailed, but it's also simple to follow. You know, It's interesting. I've interviewed quite a few people on my podcast now, not as many as yourself and others. I haven't been doing it as long, but you know, it's really fun, and it's really cool to get someone to talk to that's got such clarity about what they do, how they can help, and how they execute. And that is clear from when I talk to you. So once again, thanks, Jay.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
I want you to also, before we wrap this, are there projects that you're working on at the moment? I know you've got social media. I'll put those in the show notes for people to connect with you and follow you. But is there anything at the moment that you're working on that you want people to know about, or is there something that you're bringing to the market soon? Because I'd love for people to work with you if they're in Australia and they want to work with someone who knows, you know, how to manage males around the age of 40 and above, they need to work with Jay. So anything that you want to talk about, man?
So we have our VIP coaching program, which is really my main focus right now. We've been really growing that. It's been awesome. And during 2020, what was super cool was to see, as the world was falling apart, every one of our guys in the group thrived, because I'm really good at just building connection. We had such a tight tribe, and guys were supporting each other. Aside from our weekly group calls and our private Facebook group, they're calling each other up. They're meeting up with each other. The support was crazy. And that's continuing into 2021. I really love what we're doing with this. And so, you know, it's probably 70% fitness, like locking in your training, your nutrition, your lifestyle. But then the stuff I just talked about at the end there, like really your discipline, your habits, you know, your mindset, your confidence. So that's what we're doing. And you can go to jay.training. We'll send you to that if you want to, you know, see some videos and read some. And fill out the application.
Cool, man. And I'll also put your website address and your Instagram handle in the show notes. Jay Ferrugia, awesome stuff, mate. Go well over there. Keep doing great stuff. I really love what you do. You're a person that should be admired for your career so far and going forward. Thanks again for being on the show. We'll talk again soon, man.
Thanks, Russell.
The Australian Fitness Podcast is all about some education, insight, inspiration, motivation, lessons and learnings from myself and the various fitness professionals that I interview on this podcast. To help me get the message across, I'll be tapping into the minds and careers of other successful fitness experts to see just how they go about their trade. I'd love for you, the listener, to connect with the Australian Fitness Podcast, so please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at the Australian Fitness Podcast. If you have any comments or questions or would like to make contact, you can do so at info@australianfitnesspodcast.com.au. Finally, I am a working strength and conditioning coach, so if you want to reach out to me for professional services, programs, education and seminars, you can do so via email russell@russelljarrett.com.au. Thanks for listening.